This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. What you're about to hear next is another live conversation from the EHS Congress in Berlin, this time with the amazing Jean-Christophe Lacoste, or as he told me to call him, JC, which is much easier because I'm terrible at pronouncing names. Again, this was from the intense but amazing couple of days in Berlin. If you haven't before checked out the Congress, then please do. It's a great space to learn and evolve our ways of thinking in safety. So this is the conversation with JC live at the event. That's why there's a bit of background noise that you'll hear, and hopefully it sounds good enough for your amazing ears, not mine, because mine are terrible. They also announced live at the Berlin Congress that they are doing a London Congress joint with the event that's happening in December. So make sure you check that out, website in the description below. But let's get into this live conversation at the EHS Congress in Berlin with JC.
Do you want to introduce yourself, mate?
Yeah. Well, my name is Jean-Christophe Lacoste, and
I was going to say, I'm glad I got you to introduce yourself because I didn't know how to pronounce Jean. Is it Jean? Is that right?
Oh, you say JC.
JC. Okay. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
That's much easier.
Yeah, it's easier.
So, where are you from? What do you do?
So, I work in France. I'm based North Paris.
Yeah.
Work for an institution which is specialized in environmental safety.
Okay.
So I've been working in this institution for the past 20 years,
yeah.
And I'm a research director there.
Oh, wow.
And I've been conducting research and consulting as well, activities for different kind of companies, but mostly in the context of safety critical organizations.
Nice, yeah. Awesome. And you just done a workshop, did it go okay?
Yeah, went very well, I think.
Okay. Good.
We have to ask the people, you know.
No,
but,
right.
You know, from my point of view, it went okay.
Yeah,
I managed, you know, time and only 2 hours on a kind of a vast topic. It's not long. It's not enough for me.
I always found like I could talk for hours and hours.
Yeah. That's your job, isn't it?
Yeah, literally, yeah.
Yeah.
But can the room listen for 2 hours?
Yeah.
And it's hot as well.
It was way too hot.
Really,
and
we're
too many people.
Yeah.
Considering the size of the room.
Yeah. And you had a cramped room as well.
Yes.
Yes. Fair play.
Yeah.
And your workshop was kind of talking around like how new is New View.
Yes. Yes.
Like, talk to me about that. Why is that your?
Yeah.
Kind of
this idea that the New View was not new came from a comment on a post from a LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And I published an article about 2 years ago on the origins of the new view of human error. And I introduced controversies and the success as well of this idea that a new view of human error was needed. And from there, I think you posted a LinkedIn post online about the importance of perhaps providing empirical illustration of new view, saying like, it's great, we all love the concepts, they derive from the history of human factors and system safety.
Yeah.
I'll say a few words about that later, but then the idea was like, okay, how do we see cases of implementation?
Yeah.
And I think from a scientific point of view, one of the critical approach of the new view was to say, well, we like the ideas, okay, potentially it's good, but you know, show me cases where it is applied successfully.
Yeah. And I find that an interesting challenge because I feel like I know who that post came from. I feel like I've seen it myself. And I always find that challenge of like, we've not seen hot work and we've not seen human factors work. And I always find, well, the first time we do something, it's kind of, I know what we're saying is it's not new, but like ultimately if people are first putting it on in somewhere, you don't have that evidence to kind of say that it does work. And then I kind of never follow-on slash bolt-on question would be, we're kind of struggling in safety to work out how we measure safety. So typically it's been like, we kill less people, we harm less people.
Yeah.
And we're not sure whether we like that as a measure. So it's really hard to then go, oh, hot works or doesn't work. because we're not sure if we like the metric in which we manage working or not working.
I think one way to look into this is to look back into the history of the New View and where does it come from. And the aim of the workshop and the aim of trying to answer this question, how new is the New View, was an opportunity actually to look back into the history of safety science, basically. Yeah. And when you do this, you realize that there are many research traditions in the field.
Yeah.
And one of the influential approach in safety is behavioral-based safety, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it has been successful for many years, but it has a history of evolution.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's interesting to look into this, especially because the New View is somehow very critical about behavioral-based safety.
Yeah.
But the reason why it's interesting to look into behavioral-based safety and its evolution is that, of course, that they've got a specific discourse about what science should be about, namely measuring, experimenting, and therefore, perhaps this kind of debate on LinkedIn that you have between BBS and New View is also connected to research traditions and some sort of epistemologies, the way you need to show how something works, you know. But another interesting branch to situate New View is a different branch than behavioral-based safety. It's the branch of human factors and system safety.
Yeah.
And when you consider New View as a sort of a product or a translation to a wide audience of some of the ideas that have been developed over the past 40 to 50 years in human factors and system safety, then it's very valuable. You find it very valuable because you have a greater reach. It goes beyond the experts in human factors, and then it is able to actually reach a wider range of people, including, I think, and that's most likely the reason of the success of HOP, is the safety profession and safety professionals. Yeah. So the argument that HOP doesn't work has to be kind of situated in its origin in human factors and system safety. And we know that human factors and system safety works. We have decades of work showing this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you look at it as a translation to a wide audience of the principles that are fundamental to human factors and system safety, then you have a beginning of an answer. Mm. We know that potentially it works because human factors and system safety has worked for many years, especially in the context of safety critical systems, aviation, nuclear industry.
Yeah.
So that's one beginning of an answer.
Yeah.
I've been talking quite a lot now.
No, so it's fine.
Ask a question if you want.
You're supposed to talk more than me, to be fair. So one way that I kind of describe a lot, so when I started the podcast, I thought it had the monopoly on a new way of thinking about safety, because I'd never read any of this stuff and I'd never looked at academia. I've got a new way. I thought I was going to be rich, mate. And then I realised, there's this guy called Shalman, and I read his stuff. And I was like, who's this Decker guy? And I read his stuff. And I'm like, there's hundreds of people doing this. I was like, crap.
Yeah.
But I think as a practitioner, it can feel quite like overwhelming and confusing of like, do I do BBS or do I do HOP or
That's
do
right.
I do safety one and safety two or do I do resilience engineering? And I'd be interested on your opinion on how I've described it to safety professionals that ask me what to do. And I say the easiest way to think about this is you're at a buffet and you've got loads of different things that you can eat.
Yeah.
And you just eat one bit, try it, see how it works.
Yeah.
If it works, keep eating it, but then try something else at the same time and just keep going.
Yeah.
Is that, would you say, no, completely wrong? Or would you be like,
I would be like, one answer is to say go back to the roots of where these ideas come from.
Yeah.
And it means going back to the story of ergonomics, human factors, system safety, and therefore when you've got this background, you're able to contextualize these different schools and you understand what it is that they've got specifically about them, which differs slightly but not so much. They try to address a similar kind of issues based on the an approach of people kind of rooted in cognitive psychology, cognitive engineering.
Yeah.
When you know all about this, you're fine. Don't struggle.
Yeah.
And the problem perhaps is also that there is this kind of increasingly, and there's, you know, there's a good side and bad side to it, a safety market. There is a demand helping safety professionals to find, you know, appropriate methodologies and ideas to manage safety or safely, I would say, this morning. So basically, I think go back to the roots of these ideas, to the disciplines we mentioned earlier this morning during the panel, psychology, you know, learn a bit of psychology, learn a bit of cognitive psychology, and you won't be surprised about this diversity. You'll see that there are variations around some core fundamental ideas about the human mind, for example. So, that would be my answer. But, of course, it's demanding a little bit because you have to study.
Yeah,
and safety professionals don't necessarily always have the time.
No.
And that's why all these books, which are written for being read easily, are very successful.
Yeah.
And yet, you might struggle because you don't have the basement, the foundations of where this stuff comes from.
There's a trade-off.
So that's perhaps also what I try to do with the workshop and the stuff I've been doing over the years, is to bring to safety professionals and the safety science a clarification of the different branches and the origins of these branches. And that's it.
I like it. On the way here, I was listening to a podcast which you just reminded me of in kind of behavioral economics.
Yeah.
And they were talking about when Kahneman kind of came out with his work to challenge the fact that we're not, what did they said, the economics industry thought that humans were rational optimizers.
Yeah.
So that's what we were. And he was saying we are literally the opposite of rational optimizers.
Yeah, yeah.
We're irrational.
And they all not irrational, but we're rational in a banded way.
Yes.
Which was, you know, great contribution of Herbert Simon.
And everyone said that he was crazy and stupid, that he didn't know what he was talking about. And
like Herbert Simon?
Yeah, Daniel Kahneman.
Oh, yeah.
So when he came out and said, we're not rational optimizers, the whole economy were saying he was stupid.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's amazing, because now he's celebrated as one of the best thinkers in the world. And I thought, that's interesting, because that's kind of what we're going through in safety.
Yes.
Is that same evolution of saying, oh, Decker's an idiot or whatever.
Yeah,
and like, actually, a couple of years later, you go, he might be onto something.
It's like
a natural evolution, I think.
It is also, but you have to put it in the context, like as said earlier, of the safety market. You have to find a way of understanding that there are competing ideas out there because it's also a consulting industry.
Yeah.
And therefore, you need to find a right balance between understanding the competing ideas from a theoretical point of view and sometimes the competing ideas for a slice of the market. And things get a bit blurred these days.
Yeah, definitely. What would you kind of, if you had like you were talking to a practitioner, health, because a lot of our listeners are health and safety practitioners, and they're trying to find, what can I actually do? Like, I want to tangibly do something. They've read all of the books and whatever, and they're just kind of like, where do I start? What do I do? What would you kind of say?
Yeah, well, it's a big question, isn't it? Of course, I think one of the key ideas of human factors, system safety, and different disciplines is to pay attention to the reality of practices. And that simple idea is very powerful because safety is the product of people doing things, and they do it in certain contexts and by interacting as well with other people. And therefore, paying attention to what it is that people do realistically is very important. That basic idea should be a driver for looking into safety as a, you know, for understanding safety as a profession. But of course, you've got the compliance issue, and that has to be kind of connected with the fact that practices are often far more measure than the idea of pure compliance.
Yeah.
But you know, all these ideas that are promoted these days around these concepts, a lot of people in practice, they've been doing this for decades.
Yeah.
So the rebranding is great in a sense, but some people get annoyed because they're just like, well, I've been doing this for 20 years. Some people discover it, so that's great. So we need to find a sort of a middle ground. That was the terminology that Drew this morning mentioned during the panel, a middle ground between, you know, rediscovering stuff and providing these ideas to people who might not know about them.
Yeah.
But also to think about the next generation, including yourself, of course, of safety professionals. I don't know if you're a safety professional anyway,
for my sins.
Yeah. So to train, generation, and of course, current practitioners to this picture and understand where they come from. And the relationship between practice and theory, too. We need to be clever at that.
Yeah.
Some people are trying to develop practical theories, but sometimes we don't theorize practice enough.
Yeah.
And therefore, we reinvent the wheel when people have been doing things for years and decades very successfully, but we don't know about it.
Yeah.
So we have to try to find a middle ground here, too.
Mm. I always find it quite interesting when practitioners seem to kind of maybe forget their value in this conversation.
Yes.
So we think about the thinkers and the academics
absolutely.
A lot, and we're like, Decker's works, all these people are doing amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd say to a lot of practitioners, you realise your role is really important in taking what they say in theory and then seeing what sticks and what works, and then going, I'm feeding back to them what it looks like in the real world.
Yeah.
I know we were talking to Decker yesterday, which is why I keep referring to him, but like we were talking about it from a context of he's obviously references aviation a lot, and obviously that's where a lot of human factors come from.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of work in construction in the UK, which is made up of tiny, tiny businesses.
Oh, yeah.
Who, like, 80, something like 80% of the British economy is micro businesses.
Yeah.
And they are so far away from this conversation.
Yeah, we're not talking about aircraft here. Yeah. We're talking about like people working on work sites. And
exactly.
No, it's a completely different story when you jump from one sector to the other in terms of safety. So the adaptation of ideas to context is crucial.
Yeah.
But coming back to your point about the importance of practice, let's not forget that a lot of the stuff that is out there as promoted as theories are often the reflection of empirical work describing what people do successfully.
Yeah.
So let's not forget that initially, in many instances, many cases, the theories that we've got are the theories deriving from observing
what people do.
HRO, for instance, high reliability organization, they went into the field as ethnographers and trying to understand what it was that these companies were successful and
why. So
they were
already doing it.
Of course.
They wrote a book about it.
No.
They were just doing it.
They wrote a book about what they think was the reason why they were successful. I would say the credit is, of course, for the people being able to describe that, but the credit also for the people doing it.
Yeah.
Because these are the people in the first place actually making it happen.
Which I was thinking it the other way around, but actually, the practice is kind of first.
Of course, it is first.
So
it's always something that you need to keep in mind as a researcher as well, a practitioner, like I'm, between these two worlds. And I've always got a lot of respect for the people doing the stuff in companies and trying to find solutions to the tough problems that they face.
Mm.
And therefore, that's why I use this notion, you didn't probably pick it earlier, but theorized practice and practical theories.
Mm.
So theorized practice is you theorize what you observed, which works and make an organization successful.
Yeah.
So you theorized practice.
Yeah.
Or you're trying to develop practical theories that might find, a sort of a use in specific contexts. But don't forget that I suppose that in many cases, the idea for building practical theories has to do with theorizing practices too.
Yeah.
So there is a sort of a loop here that we need to be aware of. Because a lot of ideas that are promoted are often the product of discussing with practitioners too. So let's not forget that.
Yeah, wow. That's a great place to leave it there, mate. I'd thank you very much for your time. You're a busy man, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.